Hey, Mighty One. With nearly 300 Birthful episodes in over 5 years, it may be hard to know where to begin listening to the show. To make it easier, we've put together the Best of Birthful series, which showcases some of our favorite or most relevant episodes. This is one of those. If you enjoy what you hear, make sure you subscribe. It's free, and that way you won't miss a thing. Enjoy. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you so much for listening and all the love you give this show. So for today's episode, I am talking with Dr. Britta Bushnell about 8 cultural ideals that impact your birth. Welcome, Britta. It is so lovely to have you back on the show.
Oh, it is so good to be back. I always love sitting and having a conversation with you.
So I want to hand things over to you and let you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what's coming up.
Okay. Well, thank you. Let's see. So the big thing that I have going on is I'm publishing a book. It's called Transformed by Birth, Cultivating Openness, Resilience, and Strength for the Life-Changing Journey from Pregnancy to Parenthood. And the book is born from my 20 years experience working with birthing families, and as well as my doctoral work in mythology. I have a PhD in mythology with an emphasis in psychology. And my book is really looking at how we are transformed by the experience of becoming parents and by going through the process of birth, and looking at how there are these cultural myths or these societal myths, these ideals that influence how we birth. And I really use my book as a way to say, okay, there's a lot that we all need to know as human beings. And here's an opportunity when people are preparing for birth to learn some things, to unpack these ideals and say, oh, okay, how do I want to be in my life for birth, for parenthood, but also just for life in general?
And Britta, I wanted to, so you identified 8 different ideals, and I wanted to go through them and also think about a little bit about how they impact birth.
So the first one that really in many ways influences the additional 7 is the need for control and certainty. This one is woven into the fabric. I mean, frankly, it's part of the human condition. It's not even Western culture or modern. But it has gotten more extreme as the possibility of being in control, the reality of it has gotten more possible through technology, through science, through predictability. We've actually gotten to a point where we have started to really believe that control and certainty are possible. And that's where the pendulum has swung so far to that side that it's messed us up a little bit, that it's actually gotten us into a place of believing that a due date means that that's when our baby should come, that's a form of certainty, that we can control things, that if we write a birth plan that is detailed enough, we will create the birth that we want. These are illusions of control and certainty. That's when we've swung the pendulum too far, and we actually need the balancing side of that, which is, in the term that I use, is an openness to the unbidden, that place of accepting that which we did not invite or control to come in and have its influence on what's happening. And that part of what we need as we move toward parenthood and birth is to expand our ability to sit with the unbidden, to meet the unbidden.
And so this seems to be a good segue into, we're going to skip around, the third one that you have, which is reverence for order over wild.
Yes. So this one, This one is one of my favorites, and it's really about that, yes, that part of us that likes things to be ordered, to, you know, we love our lists. I mean, my list helps me in my life tremendously. And this is the one where I use the Greek twin gods, Artemis and Apollo, to help exemplify what it is that I'm talking about in regards to order and wild. So Artemis is the goddess of, well, she's the main goddess of childbirth. And she's also the goddess of the wilderness. So she's the goddess who lives outside the bounds of culture. She lives close to the earth. She lives with the wild animals rather than with civilized people. She connects to the cycle of the seasons, of the sun and the moon, rather than clock time. Like she's that wild side. Whereas her twin, her brother, Apollo, is representative of culture, of being appropriate. And he's everything that happens within society, within a culture. He's about music and poetry and the arts and medicine, things that define people as being cultured, right? And Western society is highly Apollonian. We love clock time. We love things that are ordered and predictable and make sense and are put together, are socially acceptable behavior, you know, being polite. These sorts of things are very Apollonian. And this, and so we tend to move again in terms of that pendulum. We are more on the side of that Apollonian, well-ordered, societally appropriate side of this, of the pendulum. But what we really need for birth is a little more comfort in that wild, out of control, not based on clock time, not connected to being politically correct or societally correct or pleasing. You know, there's this whole idea of, you know, you need to be pleasing to people. That's more, way more Apollonian. But we need for birth some of this Artemisian, this wild side that allows us to be messy, that allows us to be impolite. That's what we need in birth, and frankly, in parenthood too, sometimes.
Do you have a practice that you recommend for people to sort of hone into this reverence for wild over order, or to try to switch it up, right?
Yes. I mean, there's a number of things that I share in the book, but one of them is actually even just getting out into nature as much as possible and being connected with that element of non-societal connection. So being in nature, being in your body, like anything that helps us get into the body rather than the mind is helpful for connecting into that wild side. Okay. Mm. So dancing is one of my favorites. Putting on music and just boogieing, letting the body move, rather than doing dance steps.
So we have the veneration of intellectual knowledge and technology.
I mean, that one sort of speaks to itself to a degree, but it is the one that says that the answers exist out there somewhere for all of us, as opposed to being able to look inside and inquire within ourselves about what might be the right choice or the right decision for us in this particular moment. And that's one of the ones that's really about reconnecting with that place of not knowing, of wonder, of being in the mystery. And the practice that I talk about with that one is inserting a pause. So rather than instantaneously going to your phone and doing an internet search for an answer, is to pause between the question in the mind and the impulse to answer it and expand that so that we can begin to get more comfortable with sitting in not knowing, which also helps us tune in better to our inner voice that may guide us toward the kind of information or the kind of support that would really feed us rather than just going to Dr. Google, which can then just put us into different kinds of spirals.
Which one do you want to go to next?
Well, so then, well, if we're taking them semi in order of how they're addressed in the book, the fourth one is the vilification of pain. And so this one is that the idea that if we have pain, it should be, we should do something about it. This culture is often speaking about how if something hurts, we should medicate it or we should do something about it, remove it, rather than having a moment and saying, okay, what is this pain teaching me? What's happening? And it dismisses the reality that there is suffering in being human. There is pain in being human. I mean, one of the noble truths that the Buddha identified is life is suffering, you know, that there is going to be suffering. There's going to be upset and pain. And I'm not just even talking physical. I'm talking that there's going to be hardship. There's going to be things that hurt or are uncomfortable. And how can we, rather than try and remove all pain, how can we create some ways to be with ourselves even when there is pain?
And that applies, of course, not only to childbirth and postpartum, but even to life. And it kind of reminds me, this is something I've been talking with other parents here in my community about lately as well, is this whole, along with the vilification of pain, we've got this glorification of happiness. And that,
exactly. That should those be are our, those are connected, yeah. Completely connected. Yes,
and that,
yes,
like,
yes.
Our ideal is we need to be happy all the time. And that creates a lot of problems.
It creates suffering.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about here, is that this vilification of pain is saying, be happy, be happy, be happy, be, you know, blissful birth. It's like, well, hang on a second. It's okay. Sometimes things that are worth doing require hard work. They require difficulty. Now, that's not always the case. I'm not somebody who says you have to suffer in order to change. No, I don't buy that either. But I don't buy that we should be wrapping up life in a bow, clapping our hands and saying, be happy, be happy, be happy. Like that, I think that's discrediting the truth of being in a human form.
And in terms of the idea what to do, practice to mitigate this vilification of pain, did you have some suggestions?
Yeah, well, this is the chapter where I go into a lot of pain supporting practices. And I'm starting to shift my language from the term coping to how do we flow? Because coping implies a doingness, like a gripping. And I think often when we are facing struggle or pain, we need to, instead of like gripping and getting in there and doing everything we can and coping, 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 especially when we're talking about labor, is we need to allow. We need to flow. It's like, how do we get out of the way of the pain? How do we get out of the resistance of the pain and allow there to be like a flow with it? And so sharing practices where you can practice flowing with that, but also identifying where in your life and how in your life you already do that. One of the things that I think is really important in preparation for birth and new parenthood is not feeling like you have to go out there and learn a whole bunch of new things. It's more about identifying the ways you are already doing that in your life now, and then building those skills. It's not like you're going to step into birth and all of the things that you've used your entire life to cope with pain are going out the door. It's like you're bringing those with you because that's how you've developed skills through your whole life, because you have faced pain. Mm-hmm. You have dealt with difficulty. So noticing what works for you, what helps you.
All right. So then
that one leads us. Yes. That one leads perfectly into the glorification of independence and the go-it-alone mindset. So this one is really, I've already mentioned it a little bit, but I'll just say this is the one where it says, we don't have to do this by ourselves. You know, it's like, how can we learn to receive help? And that can be, you know, I hear a lot of people who come to my classes. I work predominantly with couples. And so when couples come to my class, there's often the birthing parent is saying, well, I really want my partner to know how to help me. Like, can you teach them how to help me? That's only one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is helping the birthing parent learn how to receive help. It's a dance. It's a both, because there's that glorification of independence and the go-it-alone mindset that says, I should be able to do this by myself. And then when we bring in somebody to help us, we're like, they should absolutely know exactly how to do it perfectly without issue right off the bat. And really, it's a dance. It's like, how do I receive their positive intention to support me? How do I accept help, which is a huge one that happens in postpartum as well for some parents, is that help may be offered, and it may not be offered in the easiest to accept way, like call me if you need anything. That implies that you actually have to pick up the phone and ask for help. And yet the part that keeps us often from picking up the phone and doing that is this, I should be able to do it by myself. So should we do the next one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the next one is the adherence to innocence. And this is that in some ways it's connected to the culture of youth, the idea of blamelessness, and you know, this one is built in pretty strongly into US culture, especially this idea that we can do no wrong, and that, you know, we don't look back on our history culturally and say, wow, you know, we did some wrong stuff, especially white culture. You know, it's like you look at some other cultures, my husband's from South Africa, and how they went through the truth and reconciliation process after apartheid. And it's like the US has never done anything like that, because we wrap up and look at we're innocent. We didn't do any wrong. We didn't know any better. You know, it's like, oh, there's kind of this blamelessness, and it's seeped into how we are it as parents, as people in the world, in this idea of I don't need to know everything. I don't need to educate myself or advocate for myself. I'm going to just trust. Some of that really gets us into some trouble.
And so can you speak a little bit more into how that shows up in birth and, you know, how to counter it?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, one of the ways that shows up is in the not willing to look at, back to the comment you made earlier about the happiness culture, it shows up in birth around the only positive birth stories, only Let's only talk about what might happen that's positive. I don't want to read the chapter on cesareans. I don't want to talk about the things that could go wrong. I just want to focus only on exactly what I want to create and make happen.
And would that be also, would that also relate to the idea of like, no, I'm just going to birth, you know, like I trust my doctor, my provider, my midwife completely. Yep. And, you know, whatever they say, this is just, that's what it must
absolutely
be.
Absolutely. There's a, you know, a home birth version of it, and there's a hospital birth version of it, and everything in between. That is that innocence of, I'm just going to, I gathered with some birth colleagues recently, and we were talking about how there is sometimes a desire to hire the doula, hire the particular midwife, have a particular kind of birth location in order to purchase the kind of birth they want. And that's an innocent belief that isn't saying, I might need to do the work. I might need to grow into this parent role, which requires a kind of maturity that is willing to look at the hard stuff, is willing to do some of the work themselves.
So then the next one, denial of death.
Yes. So the denial of death has both a real side and a symbolic side. So the real side is really looking at the truth that especially for birthing parents of color, that there are some really horrific statistics out there. And for all of us, there is still some, you know, it used to be, especially less so now, but it used to be that the most dangerous thing that a woman could do was to give birth. You know, that's not so much the case anymore for most of us, but we do need to be willing to look at some of that side of mortality and be willing to face some of that. And that stress and anxiety that is brought up in pregnancy is often connected to that. And it's also connected to the symbolic death, which is the one that I go into much more fully in the book, which is about the death of identity, the death of the capital S self. Because when we go through such a transformative experience as becoming a parent, a part of us dies. And then the last one that I address in the book is the quest for perfection and exceptionalism. And this one also kind of connects back, or in some ways is very kind of two sides of the same coin of the control and certainty. You know, the idea that perfection exists, that there is an ideal way that something should look, be, behave, and that it's that only things that are perfect have value. And in reality, imperfection teaches us a whole lot. And we learning to embrace the imperfections in our lives is key to growth and continuing and moving forward. And the exceptionalism piece is that piece that can actually tend to fuel what are sometimes dubbed mommy wars, which is that idea that I know the best way, you know, being exceptional, and I need to export that to other countries, to other parents on the playground, to other birth professionals. It's like, this is the way, you have to do it my way. You have to do it the way I see is best. And that's the piece that exceptionalism is sort of perfectionism exported, right? It's like moving it out there to other people. And these get us into trouble and they keep us from connecting. And to unhook from that perfectionism and accept and open to enoughness, to mediocrity, to it's okay to fall down. That is part of what is the medicine we need in our culture right now.
Of course. And there's no such thing necessarily as failing. Like, right. You just didn't get it right that time.
Right.
And we can learn a lot from our babies that way when they are learning to walk or learning to crawl, of like, how many times do they attempt it before they actually right. get it? And it's not, it's just, you know, it's like, oh, I fell. I can't try this again ever again. I'm right. done. I could not do it. Right.
It's like, well, none of us would ever walk if that was the case. You know, failure is just an attempt that didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
We have to just keep attempting and or try something different or keep, you know, or be like, okay, well, that one didn't work. You know, we would never berate our children for not running before they haven't even learned how to roll over. But we do it to ourselves all the time. It's like there are stages of growth. And how do we allow ourselves, especially as new parents, to be like, wow, I didn't know how to do that yet. That's okay. I don't know how to do this yet. I'm still growing.
Oh, and it's so incredibly important to realize these ideals that we hold and to what extent we hold them, because we all do. Like, I'm reading through this and I'm like, yep, mm-hmm, perfection, mm-hmm. And yeah. How that does affect how we birth, affect how we parent, affect how we live, and how really, I mean, these are the things we deal with on a daily basis. The problem is, or the situation is, that birth brings you that change, transformation from being an individual to becoming a parent, brings you face to face with all of these so hard.
Well said.
Right. Yes. So that if you're not ready for it, oh my goodness, that's where we damage ourselves. So I would so appreciate.
Yeah. And that's what makes me so excited, because I get super excited about this opportunity that birth and new parenthood offers us to face these things in our lives. It is such a huge opportunity for growth. And that makes me excited.
Now, you and me both, like the wonders of transformation that are available in birth, it's actually a gift, right? When we realize it, that it's not,
right.
It is about having a baby, but it's so much more than having a baby in terms of our life journeys. And pretty much like the biggest, definitely one of the biggest experiences we'll ever have, because it brings us so close to all these things, like even death, right?
Yes, well, absolutely. Exactly. Exactly. So and that's what I hope people get from my book, is an opportunity to look at birth and new parenthood as a growth opportunity.
So if people want to get the book or connect with you or know more, how can they do that?
Yes. So the book is available pretty much wherever books are sold. And it's called Transformed by Birth by Britta Bushnell. That's me. And you can connect with me on my website, brittabushnell.com, and on social media platforms on Facebook and Instagram. Britta Bushnell, PhD, is my, I guess they call it a handle, right? Your social media handle.
I guess I call it a handle.
I guess so. I don't know. Something like that. And I also have a community on Facebook that's called Transformed by Birth Community, which is a group, a private group. So people can join that as well.
You've been listening to a Best of Birthful episode. To listen to the original longer version of this episode, click on the link in the show notes. And there are many more where this came from. Look for episodes with the words Best of Birthful in the title to continue your deep dive to inform your intuition. You can find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com. You can also connect with us directly on Instagram. We're at Birthful Podcast. Birthful was created by me, Adriana Lozada, and is a production of La Antigua Williams & Co. The show's senior producer is Paulina Velasco. Virginia Lora is the managing producer. Cedric Wilson is our lead producer. Ali Kiltz contributed to the production of the Best of Birthful series. Thank you for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and everywhere you listen. Come back every week for more ways to inform your intuition.